Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hi, and welcome to the Game Eve edition of Land Grant in Conversation. My name is Matt Timonini. On this podcast, we talk to people in and around Ohio State athletics and the sporting world at large to bring you a different insight and perspective to the teams, athletes, and university that you love. On this episode, I'm in conversation with the athletic beat writer covering that team up north, Austin Meek. In our chat, we discuss the impact that Jim Harbaugh's absence will have on quarterback J.J. McCarthy, what the injury status is for a number of key players for the Corn and Blue who have been banged up in recent weeks, what has led to the somewhat surprising decline from all-purpose back Donovan Edwards this season, how defensive coordinator Jesse Minter will look to try to control Marvin Harrison Jr., and much more. Of course, we also get deep into the sign-stealing scandal and the subsequent fallout. Austin details how the investigation and suspension of Harbaugh have impacted both the fans and the team, and what the latter will need to do to focus specifically on the field itself rather than the emotions of the situation. Now, before we get into all of that, if you are finding this episode somewhere other than your podcast platform of choice, we would love it if you subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your daily dose of audio goodness. You can also follow us at LandGrant33 on X, Twitter, I don't know. You can follow me at BWWMatt. All right, with all of that out of the way, here is my conversation with The Athletic's Austin Meek. All right, Austin, I want to start with the player who's going to be touching the ball the most for Michigan this week, J.J. McCarthy. As we're talking here on Wednesday, I know you just kind of published an article with a number of things, but you started off talking about J.J. He has clearly had two of his worst weeks of the season in the last two games. Some of that has to do with injury. Maybe some of it has to do with not having his head coach on the sideline. Maybe some of it has to do with increased competition. But as he is coming in to the rivalry game this week, where do we stand with J.J. in terms of injury, in terms of play, in terms of comfortability with Sherrone Moore as the head coach in all extents and purposes? What should we expect going into this final regular season matchup?
Yeah, I think all of the factors that you mentioned are question marks for J.J. McCarthy going into this game. Is he 100% healthy? Does he miss having Jim Harbaugh on the sideline? Will he be a factor in the running game? I think all of those things are questions that I have going into this game. JJ McCarthy has had a really, really good season for Michigan. There was a point in the middle of the season where he was right on the verge of breaking into the Heisman Trophy conversation, and I think playing as well as any quarterback in the country. He's cooled off a little bit. He hasn't thrown a touchdown since October 21st against Michigan State. In the fourth quarter against Penn State, he appeared to have either a knee or an ankle injury that slowed him down. And then against Maryland, he just wasn't a factor in the running game, which takes away a big part of Michigan's offense, and just didn't look as sharp as what we're used to seeing from JJ. So I do expect to see the best of JJ McCarthy in this game. I think he's the type of quarterback who plays his best in the biggest games. But there may be some limitations for him, either because he's not 100% healthy, or just because for JJ in particular, I think the absence of Jim Harbaugh is significant, just because Jim Harbaugh has a special bond with his quarterback and with this quarterback in particular. And I think if there's anybody on Michigan's team who misses Jim Harbaugh when he's not there, it's probably JJ McCarthy.
Kind of sticking with that injury conversation, Michigan has had a couple injuries over the last few weeks, both to one of their biggest playmakers and a couple offensive linemen, which kind of got to be a little bit problematic against Maryland. But where do we stand with on the injury front in terms of where the Wolverines expect to have some of their key playmakers back, whether that's Roman Wilson or some of the guys on the offensive line?
Yeah. Sharon Moore sounded confident on Monday that everybody would be back, which would include Roman Wilson. It would include Ladarius Henderson at left tackle. It would include Miles Hinton, who replaced Ladarius Henderson at left tackle and then went down with an injury in the Maryland game. So it sounds like Michigan will be close to full health for this game. But I've seen many times how there's optimism on Monday, and then you still have to wait until game day to figure out who actually is available. Don't know specifically what Rowan Wilson's injury was, but he definitely took a hard hit and looked shaken up, and then was on the sideline with the sunglasses and in street clothes. So I think that that's one of those things where we're gonna have to see how the week progresses to see if he's actually available. But at least there was some optimism on Monday that Michigan would have him, and that's a big deal for Michigan, because he's been by far their biggest receiving threat this year. He has 10 receiving touchdowns, and the passing game is definitely not the same when he's not out there.
If perhaps Roman Wilson and JJ McCarthy are playing but are not 100%, undoubtedly, as they have pretty much all season, Michigan will focus a little bit more heavily on the running game. And I think we all kind of know who Blake Corum is at this point. And he might not be having the year that he did last year, but still having a pretty solid year. To me, and I don't follow the team nearly as closely as you do, obviously, but to me, it seems like there's been a little bit of a step backwards for Donovan Edwards, who last year was a complement to Blake Corum, and then at times, even especially against Ohio State, might have even been a number one back for most teams in the country. This year, it doesn't seem, at least from afar, that he is having that same kind of production. What has been the difference between what we've seen from Donovan Edwards in 2023 as opposed to last season?
There's a real thought for Donovan Edwards that after the way he played at the end of last season, after Blake Corum went down, that could be a springboard into like an All-America type season for him. And that just isn't the season he's had. He got off to a slow start, didn't score a touchdown in the first half of the season. His yards per carry was way down. Donovan's always been a player who has his best games on the biggest stage. And tops on that list, obviously, is what he did last year in Columbus. And we've started to see a little more of that big game Donovan Edwards start to show up. I thought his best game of the season was against Penn State, and I won't be surprised if Saturday is his best game of the season. That's just been the pattern for him, that he plays well in big games. But the full season he's had, it hasn't all come together for him in the way that maybe he'd hoped or that Michigan hoped for him. But he's the type of player who can break one at any moment. Anytime the ball is in his hands, he's a threat to go the distance. And all it takes is one or two of those plays, as he showed last year against Ohio State, to really change the game.
last year, in addition to Donovan Edwards running the ball last year, J.J. McCarthy hit a number of deep passes for touchdowns, and Ohio State has not done that at all this year. In fact, they have not given up a touchdown pass or any pass over 40 yards this entire season, while in the rivalry game last year, Michigan hit three of them. A lot of that has to do with Jim Knowles, a secondary, being comfortable in that second year in the system, but it also has to do with, I think, an increased level of productivity from the defensive line, from the Buckeyes. That seems to be going up against one of, I'm guessing, the weak spots on Michigan's team this season. We saw in the first half against Penn State, JJ just not really have a whole lot of time to sit back in the pocket, and that might be one of the major, if not the major, contributing factor as to why he did not officially attempt to pass in the second half. So where do we stand on the Michigan offensive line and giving JJ a clean pocket, especially if he is not 100% enable to move and scramble and extend plays so that he can find somebody open down the field?
You know, we've gotten used to such a high standard for Michigan's offensive line. They won the Joe Moore Award in back-to-back seasons and really have been the backbone of the team the last 2 years. This year's offensive line has been good. I mean, even maybe very good, especially on the interior. I mean, I think the guards and the center, Drake Nugent, Trevor Keegan, Zach Center, that's a really solid interior offensive line. But the tackle spots, I think, have been more of a question mark. And right tackle in particular has been a weakness, really throughout the season, but especially the last couple weeks. Carson Barnhart had a tough game against Penn State, and nobody was freaking out about that. Guys mentioned that they couldn't hear the cadence in the stadium. So there are a couple times that Penn State just beat Michigan off the snap. And obviously it'll be a different setting on Saturday at Michigan Stadium. And also I think, Penn State is, of all the teams that Michigan is going to face this year, Penn State is the team in the Big Ten that is going to pressure the quarterback more than any other. You would know probably better than I about Ohio State and how consistently they've been able to get pressure on the quarterback, but at least the sack numbers for Ohio State are not the same as for Penn State. But I do think that it is a big, really on both sides, going to be a big deciding factor in this game in terms of which offensive line is able to keep the quarterback clean and which defense is able to get pressure with four. I think that's what Michigan is going to want to do and probably feels like they can do. And I think Ohio State probably feels the same way.
Yeah, this has been the case for a number of years for the Buckeyes, but especially this year, the pressure numbers are much higher than the actual sacks or even tackles for loss number. And Ohio State has been increasingly getting more pressure and getting to the quarterback a little bit more in recent weeks, with Jack Sawyer finally kind of looking and feeling comfortable at a defensive end position. But you're right, they do not get home nearly as much as either the fans or the coaching staff likely would like them to. But going on to that side of the ball where Michigan is going to try to be pressuring Kyle McCord, Ohio State's offensive line, not dissimilar perhaps from Michigan's, is probably one of the weakest spots, especially at different points where they've got young starters there. I don't think that this Michigan defensive line is nearly as good as it has been in a number of years, especially, in 2021. But are they still able to kind of change the game on their own if they are only bringing four, if they aren't getting added pressure either from linebackers or corners, putting a little bit extra pressure with blitzes on quarterbacks?
Well, this Michigan defensive line on the edge is not as dynamic as it was 2 years ago. You're completely right. There's no guy on the edge that's going to be drafted number two overall on this team.
Thank goodness.
Right. I think that this edge group for Michigan is maybe a step above where it was last year and probably like two steps below where it was 2 years ago. And I think that a lot of it is going to come down to can that edge group elevate its level of play and take advantage of a matchup that appears on paper to be favorable for Michigan. I mean, I was talking to somebody else this week and said, if there's a guy for Michigan that I think maybe is not like a household name, but could have a really big game, it would be a guy like Braden McGregor, who, you know, had basically his whole career, he's had the comparisons to Aiden Hutchinson. You know, they just look similar, similar body types. You know, Braden's had some really good moments in his career, but obviously has not had the production that Aiden had. But if there's a game where he could elevate himself maybe to that level, it could be this game, because I think that there is a favorable matchup there for Michigan. But if Michigan is not able to get pressure with their front four, and not able to generate some interior pressure, because I think that's one area where Michigan's defense is better than it's been, is with the interior defensive line. If those guys can't get pressure, then I think it becomes a long day for Michigan if you have to bring extra rushers, because the weapons that Ohio State has on offense, you know, it's hard to find an answer for all of those guys, especially if you're having to bring extra pass rushers to get pressure on the quarterback.
Speaking of some of those offensive weapons that Ohio State has, obviously Marvin Harrison Jr., either because of his name or especially the increased production he's having in the back half of the season, has become kind of a Heisman Trophy finalist contender. I don't know that he's actually a contender to win the award, but a lot of teams have tried to focus on him by bracketing him, throwing multiple guys at him. Michigan does have what I would consider an elite cornerback. Are we going to throw just Will Johnson on him to go one-on-one? Do we expect that the Michigan defensive staff will try to do some more creative things at him? Where do you expect the defense to kind of land in terms of defending, you know, I think inarguably who the best offensive player and offensive weapon is for the Buckeyes on Saturday?
I do expect Michigan to change it up. This Michigan defense is pretty versatile, pretty multiple, and they rarely will just kind of sit in one thing for an entire game. And I think with a player like Harrison, you have to be able to do that. I don't think you can just go into it saying you're going to put your best guy on him and cover him one-on-one for the whole game. But I also do think that that's going to be part of the plan. I look back last year, and I mean, despite the score, Ohio State had success, you know, throwing to Harrison and to Ibuka. But Will Johnson, when he was matched up with Harrison, did a nice job in the game last year. I would expect to see a lot of that matchup for Michigan with some changeups thrown in there, and then just have to see how it goes. You know, who's winning that matchup as the game goes along. I think that matchup is a big key, Will Johnson and Marvin Harrison.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Moving away from the actual on-field stuff, obviously there's been an unbelievable amount of conversation about this game and everything else that's going on around the Michigan program over the past month. Where is the program, the players, the coaches, and I guess if we want to dive into that, the fan base in terms of this game? Because I know Jim Harbaugh was asked about kind of his thoughts on Ryan Day yesterday, and he hemmed and hawed around it, like I think Ryan Day would do the same if he was asked. But going into the rivalry game after everything that's happened over the past month, where is the mindset for the program coming into a game that, even without all of the hullabaloo and scandals and everything, would still be potentially one of the biggest games in either program's history?
Yeah, I mean, I can probably speak to the mindset of the fans more than anybody, because
sure.
You're from them more directly. I can tell you they're kind of losing it almost. Like this month has just for everybody been like really disorienting, like for the fans, for the players, for the coaches, for even those of us who cover the team. Like there's just been, it's been constant. It's really, mean, it's really easy to lose your bearings and just all of the stuff that's come out and, rumors and theories. And you spend 5 minutes on Twitter and you'll see, all of the different things that are being thrown back and forth between these two fan bases. And so I think the challenge for the team is to just, when it's time to play the game, just take all of that out of it. I mean, I imagine that's a hard thing to do, but it's also something that this Michigan team has done really well. And honestly, last week against Maryland was really the first time I even wondered, like, is this team starting to feel the weight of everything that's been swirling around the program? And so I don't know exactly how they're going to respond on Saturday, if they're going to look like a team that just has, spent the last month in the spotlight and is starting to feel the strain of that, or if they're going to come out and I wouldn't be shocked if Michigan comes out and plays its best game of the year. I mean, they've done that the last 2 years. But I just think there's more unknowns for Michigan going into this game than there are for Ohio State. A lot more things that if Michigan wins, they're going to have to overcome a lot of things that are in their path. Whereas for Ohio State, it's not the same thing. It feels like Ohio State is coming into this game just a lot clearer focus.
I mean, I think that would probably be true for any team that Michigan was playing this week, that they would have less to kind of wade through to get to a to kick off than the Wolverines are right now, because they obviously have just kind of an absurd level of not only actual news, but like you were talking about, everything from theories and conspiracy theories to just random trash talking between fans, and we certainly see it on our end as well. Are you have you been able to get a sense as to what the status of any investigations? Obviously, we're just looking at the NCAA investigation is right now. Like, has there even been any word as to where they stand in that? Is it do they does the program feel comfortable with what's happened so far, that that's going to be it, or are they expecting another shoe to drop? Do they have any idea as to what is coming down the pike from the NCAA?
Well, all the indications are that the NCAA is moving rapidly on the investigation. Now, rapid in NCAA term may not be
By 2030,
rapid, right, in anybody else's mind. But in one of the letters that was sent from Michigan to the Big Ten, Ward Manuel indicated that at least the NCAA had told Michigan that they wanted to have the investigation done this fall. So I think it is moving faster than a typical NCAA investigation would, in part because a lot of this information I think came to the NCAA really almost like in one kind of neat package, right? The NCAA didn't have to go out and investigate this from scratch. It's at least as we understand it, a lot of the NCAA has a lot of the information that it needs to move forward, and it's just a matter of now what else comes out as the NCAA continues to gather more information. I mean, obviously, I don't have any inside information in terms of what's going to happen. But just look at the fact that Jim Harbaugh missed half of this season already. Three games that Michigan imposed to start the season as a result of a previous NCAA investigation. And then three games that the Big Ten imposed as a result of the violations of the sportsmanship policy. And so what's still unresolved there is number one, the NCAA still could pursue additional sanctions on Jim Harbaugh or Michigan from the previous NCAA investigation because they weren't able to resolve that before the season. And then whatever the NCAA is going to try to tack on for the in-person scouting allegations, which I expect the NCAA to try to continue to push for more. I don't think that the Big Ten suspension is the only punishment that we're going to see, or that the NCAA will just sort of take that and be satisfied with it. So what that means for Jim Harbaugh, I think, is really hard to say. And again, we don't even know, will Jim Harbaugh be the coach at Michigan next year? That's a question we seem to ask every offseason, and I think it's an especially relevant question this year because if he is back, certainly there's the possibility that he'll have additional suspensions or sanctions of some sort coming out of these NCAA investigations.
I know that you are far too principled of a journalist to kind of dive into predictions. But what I'm going to ask instead is, you talked about how kind of heightened the fervor from the fan base has been. Has there been one of these conspiracy theories or Twitter threads or Reddit threads that you've just enjoyed personally reading more than any other? Not asking, like, do you think it's actually real? But has there been anything that's just, you've read it and you just kind of like chuckled in a good natured way that like, oh, that's funny and that's actually really good, and whoever wrote that, props to them, because they've got a future in fiction writing or anything like that?
Well, certainly the lawyers in the Michigan fan base have come up with some really innovative legal theories. I mean, I have to give them credit. Like, they really have put in the time, and some of them are, you know, genuinely entertaining to read. I mean, to me, the question of how all this started is an interesting question that, you know, I'd like to know. And
yeah, that seems, you know, like an actual newsworthy point of this.
Right. Exactly. Like, I mean, there's one sense where you say, you know, it really doesn't matter where it came from or how it started. The fact is that it seems pretty clear that there's evidence to back up the allegations, and that's the primary focus. And I think that that's right. But I also think the question of how this all started is an interesting one. And, you know, the reporting in the Washington Post that there was a third party investigation that brought some of this information to the NCAA. I mean, I thought that was fascinating. I'm not aware of, like, a, you know, another similar case there might be, but, you know, again, I think it's all interesting. And I certainly, you know, just in my own curiosity, would like to know the answer. But I also know, you know, right now there's a lot of theories out there that just aren't supported by the facts. And so we'll just keep trying to follow it wherever it goes. And we may never know the answer. I mean, I don't know if that'll come out. Maybe it will, maybe it won't. But it's certainly been a wild thing to follow, because it seems like every day there's a new theory or a new piece of information out there that just, you know, adds another layer to this whole story.
Yeah. The book or the oral history of this whole thing that comes out in 10 years or whatever is going to be fascinating, and people are going to be able to kind of pull back some of the curtains on that. I'll wrap it up here with just a couple of real quick short questions. I think that, and I think you mentioned this in one of your recent articles, and I think a lot of Ohio State folks have been talking about this as well. We're looking, I believe this is year 9 of Jim Harbaugh's tenure in Ann Arbor. It's not exactly the 10-year war between Woody and Bo, but it's not dissimilar in terms of, like, especially with the last few years, and kind of the matchups between the two programs. But one of the major differences are that Woody and Bo obviously had a pre-existing relationship. They remained close friends, maybe not as much during the 10-year war and when they were coaching against each other, but certainly afterwards. There is clearly no love lost between Ryan Day and Jim Harbaugh. Do you think that that is a positive for the Michigan team? Do you think that that gives them a little bit more motivation with all of these rumors that have been swirling and people, you know, you didn't say it, you did the journalistic thing, I don't have to do that. People pointing to Ryan Day as maybe the start of this whole thing and bringing up potential RICO charges and all of that. Like, do you think that that has a material impact on the way that the team approaches this rivalry game?
I personally don't think it's, like, good for anybody, good for the rivalry or good for the players or good for the fans. I mean, one of the things when I started this job and moved to Ann Arbor and started to get familiar with the Michigan-Ohio State rivalry and also the Michigan-Michigan State rivalry.
Yeah.
One thing that I really appreciated about the Michigan-Ohio State rivalry was the fact that even though those two teams, like, really hated each other's guts, it seemed like there was an underlying respect, that they regarded each other as equals, and, you know, and at some level had to sort of acknowledge the, you know, the validity of the other as a rival. And I mean, I think there's still some of that, especially from the players. Like, when we talked to the players this week, I think I heard a lot of players, Michigan players, say, like, look, you got to acknowledge, like, this is a good Ohio State team. They're 11-0. You've got great players, and great players respect other great players. But
sure.
To your point, I'm not sure that that extends to the coaches right now. And I think a lot of times the fans of both teams really take their cues from the coaches. And so I can't tell you that I feel like it's a good direction for the rivalry to continue down this path. I think it would probably help everybody for cooler heads to prevail a little bit. But there's just a lot of, they didn't get here in one day. It's been a lot of build up to this, and it certainly adds to the intensity. I'll say that.
Yeah, I think that whether you want to say it's the most anticipated or the most emotional or whatever, I think that this game on Saturday is definitely one for whatever type of record book you want to put it in, beside the fact that they are, again, number two and number three in the country. It should be a fevered pitch by the time we hit noon on Saturday. But I'll wrap it up here, and this is kind of a two sides of one coin question. If Ohio State is going to win the rivalry game for the first time since 2019, what is it do you think that they have to do? And then conversely, if Michigan is going to win for the third straight year, what is the one single thing that you think they have to do to make sure that they end up with a Big Ten East championship?
Yeah. I think probably the thing that Ohio State has to do to win this game is basically to not let Michigan do what Michigan will tend to want to do in a game like this, which is just to be able to win by running the ball. Michigan did that against Penn State. They did that to varying degrees against Ohio State the last 2 years. I mean, part of last year's game was that Michigan initially was able to hit some big plays through the air, which then opened up the running game. But all things being equal, even though Michigan's been more balanced this year, I think what Michigan deep down would really want to do is be able to just run the ball down Ohio State's throat. And I think Ohio State's going to have to make J.J. McCarthy be a passer as he was last year in that game. For Michigan, I think one thing that Michigan has to do, I think Michigan has to get pressure on Kyle McCord. I think that to me looks like the formula for Michigan to be able to win this game, because I think Kyle McCord is the kind of quarterback who, if you give him time and if he's comfortable, has so many weapons around him that it's going to be really hard for Michigan to defend all of those guys with a quarterback who is just sitting in a clean pocket. But I also think a game of this magnitude for Kyle McCord's first start in the rivalry, Michigan can get some pressure on him, get him uncomfortable, then that could be the formula for Michigan to neutralize some of the playmakers that Ohio State has. So I expect it to be a really close and competitive game. I mean, I thought that the last 2 years, and it hasn't been, at least in the fourth quarter, but at least going into it, it looks like two really evenly matched teams. And I think it should be a really close and a hard fought game.
Yeah. All right. Very last question. I won't ask you to give us a score prediction, although you are welcome to if you would like. But you said you thought it was going to be close. So do you think that that is a high teens, low 20s close? Is it a high 20s, low 30s close? Or is it something completely different? Where are you at least putting the ballpark for where these two teams will be when the fourth quarter ends on Saturday?
Yeah, I've gone back and forth a million times about who I think is going to win this game. I finally settled on, I think I said Michigan 34-31, but I have like zero confidence in any part of that prediction. I mean, it felt like a really high score to pick in a game with two defenses that have been two of the best defenses in the country. And I'm not convinced that there will be that many points on the board, but I do think probably for both of these defenses, the defensive numbers have been inflated by the fact that there aren't many
Big Ten. Yeah.
that are going to really test either of these defenses. And I thought last week for Michigan was kind of telling when they finally faced a quarterback and a passing game for Maryland that was like competent. And it's not like Michigan just got shredded, but they gave up some things in that game that they haven't given up all season. And I think the same might be true for Ohio State, and that this will be clearly the best offense that they've faced all season. And so I won't be surprised if both of these teams put more points on the board than what we've seen from either of them, either defense, all season.
Yeah, having both teams in the 30s, I think I don't know that I would have guessed that, but it's certainly possible. And I think you're right. I was looking at some of the numbers yesterday and kind of like just thinking about how good these two defenses are. They are the top two scoring defenses in the country statistically, but I'm not 100% sure that that's actually true just because of who they've played this year. They have not necessarily gone up against teams that have been incredibly high quality. I think the teams that they've played against have been like in the low 70s and high 80s in terms of like the average scoring offense. So it's not like they've been playing quality offensive opponents all season. But anyway, Austin, enjoy the game on Saturday. Maybe take like a helmet and a flak jacket if you're going to be walking around the stadium, because
Who knows?
Yeah, I know Ohio State's like bringing extra police officers with them just in case. So stay safe. We don't need anything crazy happening, especially to the media members who have no part in all of that. But have a great Thanksgiving. Enjoy the game, and I'm sure it'll be one to put as a nice culminating chapter in whatever nonfiction book happens in 10 years or so.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thanks for having me on. Have a great Thanksgiving. I appreciate it.